Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Journey to Success Radio Network. Our purpose on Journey to Success Radio is to interview people who are making a positive difference in the world. We explore important aspects and areas of life, including business, sales, spiritual, physical, mental, relationships, disabilities, and many more interesting topics. Our broadcast team so far consists of outstanding people from both Canada and the U.S., including several Napoleon Hill certified instructors, as well as several authors. My name is Tom Tuttle Cunningham, and I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor. I'm also a regular contributor to their weekly newsletter. And in March of 2012, I spoke at the Napoleon Hill International Convention in Malaysia, where I shared the stage with Deepak Chopra, who was the keynote speaker of that event. I've had rheumatoid arthritis from my jaw to my toes since the age of 5. That's 44 years now. And in that time, I've had 4 hips, 4 knees, and 2 shoulders replaced, and been hospitalized about 40 times. I also stand about 5'1". That's due to the heavy daily doses of the oral steroid prednisone that I had to take to fight my arthritis. I'm also a senior research director for the Canadian Business Journal, which is a digital-only publication, and we're the official and only media partner of the Canadian Chamber of Commerce. You can find us at cbj.ca, and you can find out more about me at my website. It's mrpma.ca. That's mrpma.ca. My guest today is Norris Williams. Passion, power, presence. Those are the words used to describe Norris Williams by many of his students, colleagues, and companies that he's worked with. Born to teach, Norris has devoted his life to taking people to the next level. He had very humble beginnings. He was raised in a small East Texas town, the son of blue-collar workers, and Norris suffered severe bouts of depression, low self-esteem, and extreme loneliness as a child. Taking this into adulthood, he decided one day he couldn't take it anymore and began to doggedly seek the answers. He was introduced to the personal development industry, and his life has never been the same. He conquered the evils that were preventing him from exploding into his destiny, and then has now went on to speak for more than 100,000 audience members. Norris founded his signature system, Transforming Your Business into an Empire, to help entrepreneurs realize that the true power in their business is them. Mr. Williams has also penned a book by the same title. The founding principle of the entire Empire movement is the empire without can never be larger than the empire within. Norris is available for speaking engagements, seminars, and joint ventures. And welcome to the show today, Norris.
Thank you so much, Tom. It is absolutely fabulous. I've been following you for a while. Of course, I'm a student of Napoleon Hill as well. So I'm so glad I get the opportunity to serve that community back today.
Amazing. And, you know, we're going to talk a little bit more later after my favorite question, but a little bit more later about depression. You can imagine someone who's suffered pain since 5 years old and that. That's been a challenge. Not too often. You wouldn't think of that of Mr. PMA. But for people that are undergoing that, we'll talk about it later and let them know that, hey, they'll get through it just like we get through it, just like other people get through it. Now, Norris, since you've listened to me before, you know that I always like to start the show by asking, what age were you when you first came across Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill? And if there was anyone special in your life that said, Norris, you got to read this book.
Okay, I have a little story behind that. That is the perfect segue into this whole interview. Like you just read in my bio, I thank you for reading that. I'm from a small East Texas town called Nacogdoches. I dare you to try to spell that. you know, I was raised the son of blue-collar workers. You know, my dad was an electrician. My mother was a daycare worker. So, you know, I didn't really know anything about positive mental attitude. I didn't know anything about entrepreneurship, building a business. I didn't know anything about any of that. Now, what I did learn from my parents was hard work, determination, keeping your word, you know, the foundations of being a great business person. But I had to go elsewhere to learn, you know, and as a kid, I always knew there was something different meant for me. I always knew I'd be great. I didn't know what it was going to be. I had no idea. So my path started out with, You know how your parents tell you, go to school, get good grades, mm-hmm. get a good job, get 50 degrees, which I stopped at the whole MBA thing, which that's another conversation for another time. So mm-hmm. I did all that. And I eventually ended up moving to this small city called Houston, Texas. So I was moving in search of opportunity and big things, and I was like, well, the city has to have some kind of freedom or something for me. So I got here. Tom, I came unprepared. I didn't even have a resume. I didn't have anything. I just had my best friend from high school ran track at University of Houston. So he's like, look, you can come with me and you try to have a new start. So I did that. So I moved here, and I started noticing, looking around, like, okay, I had this job leasing apartments, which was fine. I was making decent money, but I remember the first time that somebody, you know, when you take the application, they have to put their income on there. So I'm thinking, okay, fine. So this guy put that he made $20,000 a month on his application. So I'm like, oh, there's no way. So I'm about 23 or 24 at the time. So I was like, there's no way. Okay, I'm making $12 an hour, and this dude is making $20,000 a month. Okay, something is wrong with the equation here. So I called him. His name was Mike. I said, Mike, I think you made a mistake. I think you made $20,000 a year, not $20,000 a month. Well, normally the person would have been offended, but Mike was like, no, Norris, I make $20,000 a month. I'll bring my paycheck stuff to you tomorrow. The next day, he brought in his paycheck stuff. I was like, okay, something is wrong here. This dude is younger than me, and he's making $20,000 a month. Now, where I'm from, the average wage is about $23,000 a year. So when I saw somebody making $20,000 a month, I was like, uh-oh, okay, God, I need to know what's going on here. So that's when I began to be open to there are other things going on besides what I'm doing. So it just so happened that I was dating a young lady at the time, and she invited me to a meeting. She was like, sweetheart, I want you to come to this meeting with me, and, you know, there are going to be a lot of people there. It's going to be really exciting. So, you know, Norris being young and naive, I don't really care about the meeting. I liked her.
Yeah, exactly.
So I followed her to the meeting. It was a network marketing meeting. Now, being from a small country town, I had never heard of network marketing. I didn't know what network marketing was. I had no idea. But when I walked in, the funny thing, when I was like, all these people were dressed sharp. There was so much excitement and energy. I'm like, we don't do this at my office every day. What is this? What is this thing? What is network marketing? So needless to say, I ended up joining. That was my first company in network marketing. Had a lot of fun, learned a lot of stuff. But there was a gentleman. He wasn't even my upline. He wasn't my cross line. He was just in the organization with me. I can't even remember the guy's name. But after a Saturday, you know, they have the Super Saturday. So after the Super Saturday, he walked over to me. He's like, Mr. Williams. He was an older guy, too, calling me Mr. Williams. I'm like, okay, Mr. Williams, I see something in you. There's something I want to share with you. So he pulled out a book and handed me a book. And this book changed my life forever, and that book was Think and Grow Rich.
Wow.
I had never, ever heard of this book ever in my life, never. So I was thinking somebody had hidden the goods from me. So I looked at the title. I was like, okay, the title sounds kind of sexy. But when I started reading it and saw what Mr. Hill went through to give that information to us, I'm like, why wasn't I taught this in the fourth or fifth grade? Why wasn't I taught this at an early age? Why wasn't I taught that there are people who actually do live this type of way? Where have I been? I felt so blinded. So that, you know, that turned into my whole journey in the personal development. So, you know how personal development goes. You read one book, you got to read another book. You read another book, you got to read another book. So at this point, I probably read over 200 books easily, because it's an addiction, because you want to incrementally get better and better. You know, Jeff Olson talks about the slight edge. The same thing. You want to be the best person you can be. So that led me all the way back to but Think and Grow Rich is where it started. And I will thank Napoleon Hill. I've never met him in person, but I want to thank him so much for that one book, because it totally changed my life for me and for the generation to come after me.
Wow, I love it. I love it. And as you mentioned, one book leads to another. And I was just recently starting this year compiling a list of all the books I've read in 27 years. It's hard to remember, but The Slight Edge is one of them. And I love that book, The Slight Edge. Nothing really complicated in there, but still implementing it is the challenge that people have in this world. So very cool. And also your story is a great example for people like myself who love to give away books. I love to give away books. And so imagine, like, this guy never met you before. He didn't know you from a hole in the wall. He saw something in you. He gave you an amazing book. And look at the impact that man had on your life. As you said, he wasn't your upline, downline, sideways. You're just in the business.
But Tom, here's the magic. it's not even really about what it did to my life. It's going to be about the lives of the people I have touched thus far and the lives of the people I would touch for the rest of my life. That's the magic in the whole thing. So he's going to share in the equity of an entire generation being changed just for him coming over to me out of the 500 or 600 people there. This guy didn't know me from Adam and walked over and just handed me that. I still remember it was the white cover with the green letters with the gold trim. It was that person thinking you're rich. I remember that.
Nice.
So that's the way it happens.
That's the one I have, the same copy. And, I often mention that to people, like, when you change someone's lives through speaking, writing, whatever, you not only change their life, you change everyone they come in contact with, their wife, their family, their kids, their parents, their brothers and sisters, their friends. And so you create a legacy by changing one person's life.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing, amazing. And so once you'd gotten into that personal development, as you mentioned, it really does become addictive. But let's talk about your childhood, because this is something not everybody, even you put it in a bio. It's good you put it in a bio, because, you know, I've led a number, two or three different support groups at our church on depression. Some people that I never suspected in the world showed up at these support groups. If you've been in chronic pain 24/7 for 45 years with all those surgeries, there's times when you're not extremely positive. And yet our lives are an example that you can get through that, you can get past that, and whatever the thoughts you have are probably not realistic, they're probably not true about yourself. So tell me about your journey with the depression, the self-esteem, and the loneliness, because I imagine once you start reading Think and Grow Rich and personal development books, that wipes that out pretty quick.
That absolutely wipes it out. I'll go back in time for you. There are two of us, it's myself and my younger brother. And the reason why I was depressed as a youngster, because I was an overweight kid. I was a chubby kid. And so when you're a chubby kid, the girls don't really like you. People pick on you. People call you fat. People call you overweight. And in addition, I was kind of brainy. So I was a fat nerd. So I was both. So the kids picked on me. So, you know, I didn't feel like I fit in either category. So it just weighed on me so much and so much. And, you know, I didn't have the athletic prowess of a lot of my friends. See, like, my younger brother is an athlete extraordinaire. I mean, he's the type of dude that he can pick up any kind of ball in any kind of sport. In 2 weeks, he's an expert. You know, God blessed him with that gift. But, you know, I was always a brainiac. Well, when you're a kid, you don't get bonus points for being a brainiac. They call you a nerd and they pick on you and why you make such good grades. And Tom, so much so I remember in the fifth grade, I allowed my grades to slip on purpose. And I made sure I got the answers wrong on my test on purpose to get lower grades so that I would fit in with the rest of the kids. I wanted to fit in so bad. So what happened was it got worse. It didn't get better. It got worse. And then as I go through adolescence and, you know, you're changing over and you start liking girls. So I'm liking girls. They're not liking me. So now I'm being rejected by everybody around me. And then as far as my family is really warm. But, you know, as a young man, you always want the approval of your father. You always want your father to say, pat you on the back and say, I'm proud of you, son. Good job, son. Go for it, son. I never got that. You know, in my family, it was like, if I feed you and take care of you, that equates to I love you. So my dad never verbally told me, son, I love you, or son, I'm proud of you, or son, any of that. And I wanted that so bad. And since I didn't get it verbally, I began to feel like I wasn't worthy of it. So at that point, I just started shutting down. Now, outwardly, I would kind of express being positive. On the inside, I was decaying. I was rotting. I was lashing out at people, and I would just go in my room and sit for days. I would actually put myself on diets to lose weight. My mother and I laugh and joke about it now, but at the time, I remember vividly going over 160 pounds, and I thought it was the end of the world. I was in like sixth or seventh grade. We had a digital scale with red lettering on it. I remember going over 160 to 162, and I thought it was over. I mean, I'm way over that now, which is fine, but then it just wasn't. And then I remember there's a size jeans for fat kids called Husky, and I had to wear the Husky jeans, and it had the Husky patch on the back of it, so everybody knew I had to wear the fat boy jeans. So the funny thing is it carried over into life, my adult life, because – even though I began to play football in the ninth grade, so at that point you're working out, I started trimming the baby fat, and then I started getting taller. So I ended up being 6'5" at the end of the day. So I ended up being tall. I ended up being, you know, I developed my look and everything, and girls started being attracted to me. Now, on the outside, physically, I was a nice-looking guy, but on the inside, I was ugly as hell. And I didn't know, I was awkward. I didn't know how to relate because on the inside is what makes all the difference on the outside. But to myself, I wasn't worthy. I was ugly. I was still this fat kid in my head. And it took me about 20 years to get over that. It wasn't until I got about 35 before I really totally put it in the past. So all that stuff went all the way into my adulthood. Now, the way I came over it was I've read a whole bunch of books by Tony Robbins, Les Brown, Zig Ziglar, Dennis Waitley. You read them, you name it, I've pretty much read, almost everybody. And as conquering anything, it takes the small victories to get the one big victory, just like Alabama, who just won the national championship. They didn't play all 12 games on one day. Every week they played a new game against a different opponent. They defeated that opponent, they moved on to the next opponent. They defeated that opponent, moved on to the next opponent, and eventually they won the championship. Now they're the champions. So that's the way I got to be a champion in my life right now. Champion meaning I'm living in my purpose because I had to conquer those little things along the way. And that's the only way it's going to happen. That doesn't mean it has to take forever, but there are the smaller things that help you conquer the bigger thing. So that's a history of, you know, I go back and look at my life now. I go back home, visit my family, my friends, and, you know, the bedroom I grew up in, my mother still stays in the same house. So I can stand in that bedroom and remember nights crying myself to sleep. I remember nights being depressed. Remember nights not, you know, day mornings not wanting to get up and go to school because the kids might pick on me. I remember all that stuff. But you know what it does now? It's fuel to my fire because I know there are other people out there who feel the same way. And now my job is to let them know there is a way out. That's my prime directive every day. That's what gets me up early in the morning. That's why when I'm on stage, I'm almost about to just combust. Because there's so much energy in me and so much I want to give back. And it has nothing to do with, you know, wanting to get it back at those people. I don't even care about that. Because really, if you go according to what the Bible says, everything works together for the good. Those things didn't hurt me. All those negative things that I thought were negative helped me get to where I am right now. So I thank God for every single incident.
Exactly. I love it. And I love what you said there because, geez, I'm 49. I found out in life from about three or four women. Because when I was young, I was a good person, nice and funny and all the great things, good person. But I kept seeing myself as short and handicapped. And so I've had three or four women over the years that I used to know when I was in my teens. They're like, you know, I really wanted to date you, but you really didn't seem like you, you know, you never followed through. I made it clear to you. And like you say, you can look great on the outside, but internally, if you're thinking, wow, that person deserves better, you know, I'd ask them out, but they deserve better. What silly thinking. And so your subconscious, your self-esteem can talk you out of things that are just right there in front of you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Crazy. And so, you know, once you start working on your self-esteem, your self-image, and then also getting a little realization that, as the Bible says, if you don't ask, you're not going to receive. So
right.
Once you correct those two things, your self-image, your self-esteem, who God says you are, and what God says you are is what you are, then a lot of these self-esteem issues go away, and then a lot of the things that you want to do in your life become more possible. And so I really, really love that. Now, tell me about your system transforming your business into an empire, because that is quite a title. Do you have three or four tips or strategies that you can share with the listeners?
Okay, I will do that, but allow me, if I could, to address something on the last question that you said about self-esteem and that, because I think this will really deliver some people.
Yeah.
You were talking about self-esteem and you know, gaining it. Now, that we don't really need to gain it. We don't need to learn it. It's already inside of us. We just need to remember it. We need to remember that we were born infinite beings. There's nothing wrong with any of us. We just got lost along the way. All you have to do is remember who you were, because if you look at kids don't care about what people think. All kids want to do is go full speed every day. They get up every day, and anybody has young kids know this. They get up every single day with no fear. Now, they do some stuff maybe that we think they shouldn't do, but kids go full speed every day. All they want to do is fully express themselves. every single day. And this is what happens. Somebody comes along and says, stop, don't do that. Somebody says, no, you're not supposed to do that. So instead of going full speed all the time, they start to doubt themselves. And doubt is where all this other depression and stuff derives from. Because before somebody puts that doubt on you, which is doubt that they learned from someone before them, and then they pass it on down to you, before that, the kid has no limits. Think about it. When we're all kids, we want to have a maid, a butler, have houses and cars and unlimited travel. We have no limits to our dreams when we're kids. But then when we become adults, we become what's called reasonable. We become what's called realistic. We become what's called, well, you know, I don't want to go above the crowd, when God is clearly calling us to go all out for everything that I called you to do. So it's really more about remembering than it is learning. So that's one of the things I teach, teach in my seminar.
Not only that, Norris, remembering but also believing, because you can remember what God said about you, but if you don't believe it, you're not going to live in that reality. So remember it. You're a friend of God. He created you. You have skills and talents that he created you for. Remember it. But now go and live like you believe that.
Not only that, he said, I created you in my image, which means, while I'm in the pulpit, all the power he has, you're privy to. So think about if you really knew that God was your business partner and you went, if you knew every day you sat down to make calls in your business, if you knew God was sitting right there beside you, what would you not do? If you knew that you need to go talk to that prospect over there and you knew God was right beside you, you would talk to anybody in the world. You wouldn't even care because you know God is right there with you. And the fact of the matter is, he is. We just have to believe that he is. He said, be still and know that I'm God. He didn't say think that I'm God. He didn't say debate. He didn't say hypothesize. He didn't say theorize. He said, know that I'm God with absolute certainty. So now I'll talk about
that. Wow.
I had to address that. But
I love that.
Transforming your business into an empire. Here's how the book came about. First of all, let me define empire because it has nothing at all to do with money. Everybody that's in business for themselves should be there for one reason and one reason only. You're not in it for the money. You're not in it for what people say about you. You're not in it for any of that stuff. You're in business for yourself because your business should be the muse that gives you the life that you want, not the life you think you should have, the life that you want. Because in the Bible it says we can have everything they want. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. It didn't say need. It didn't say need, it said want. So if God will give you your wants, that means your needs are taken care of. We get so focused on our needs that we sacrifice our wants. But he said, I want to give you everything. All you got to do is walk in the door that I'm sending you through, and you can have everything you want. So when I say turn your business into an empire, think about being the king of your own empire. Everybody caters to the needs of the king and the wants of the king. Your business should do the same thing. Your customers, your business partners, everybody should cater to what you need and want. Your business should do absolutely the same thing. And if your business is not there, then it's not a reflection of what's outside of you. It's a reflection of what's inside of you, which is my main teaching principle is the empire without can never be bigger than the empire within. So if something is wrong in your business right now, if you're short of money, you're short of time, you're short of energy, you're short of effort, there's nothing outside of you that is the cause for that. The cause for that is buried deep inside you somewhere. There's something that happened along the way that's stopping you right now. Because, see, when a lot of times we live in the past and we live in the future. We don't live in the present. So every day we get up, we're thinking about, I can't do that because 3 years ago this happened to me and it hurt me and I don't want it to happen again. So it stops you from going forward. So one of the questions I normally ask my coaching students, or even when I'm speaking at a live seminar, I'll say, what is the one thing that's happened to you in your past that if you could erase it totally from your memory forever would change your life right now? And it's always something like, I was rejected by my father, or I was molested as a kid, or there's something happened that somebody's holding on to that's keeping them from going forward. There's something someone is holding on to that's keeping them from really exploding into their destiny. So I get them to take whatever that thing is. For example, me and my father. That held me up. You know, that fear of rejection. I felt like I was rejected by my father, so I did not want to be rejected by anybody else. So what it takes is taking that rejection and making it something tangible. Because when something is intangible, you don't feel like you have control over it because you can't see it, you can't feel it, you can't touch it. But it's still there. So just like the Starbucks cup that I have in my hand, when I get tired of this Starbucks coffee, I take it and I throw it in the trash can and I never see that coffee again. You do the same thing. You make your fear something tangible, walk over and put it into the spiritual trash can, and you never address it again. That's all it takes. You got to make it something tangible to know that you have power over any situation there is. So that's really the core of the entire program, and there are several steps in the program, but it's really about enlarging self to be equivalent to how large you want the empire to be, because the empire will never be bigger than how big you are on the inside. And, of course, that equates to the level of belief you have and advancing yourself and making yourself into a bigger person, because we make a lot of purchases, but we don't make a lot of investments. See, a purchase is something you go out and get for a temporary gratification. So a purchase is something like, a car, a house. But we treat business opportunities as purchases as well. That's why so many people join so many different network marketing companies. They're not making an investment. They're making a purchase. They're purchasing a starter kit. They're not invested in the business. They purchased a starter kit. So you're being a shopper. You're not being a business person. You're not being an entrepreneur. You're being a shopper. If you're just going to be a shopper, go buy a purse. Don't buy the starter kit. You're wasting your time and you're wasting the time of your upline. But when you get ready to invest, when you make the decision to invest, that means you put everything you have in, because when you purchase something, you have no expectation of a return. When you go buy a purse, all you're expecting is for people to compliment you and say, okay, that's a pretty purse. But when you invest in a business, you expect a return. So there is no expectation with a purpose. With a purchase, there is a huge expectation with an investment. So I get people to move from purchasing to investing.
Nice, nice. And I see the mindset shift there, which is so important. Now, also, you've mentioned a few times about definite purpose and purpose, and that's Napoleon Hill's number one success principle. He said you could have the other 16, but if you don't have definite purpose, you're not going to be a success. And yet it's not easy to do. I know when I finished my Napoleon Hill Leader Certification, I drew up a definite purpose, and Judy Williamson, the director of the World Learning Center, said, Tom, that's not your definite purpose. You're trying to be Shane Moran from OrganoGold, my friend. And so now I had to rethink it, and now the one that I have, I truly believe that if God were sitting across a desk from me or sitting beside me, he would slide a piece of paper over and say, Tom, this is why I created you. This is what you are here for. And when you have that purpose, that powerful purpose that you know is your purpose, it allows you, first of all, to shed a lot of things out of your life that have no value to your definite purpose, and it allows you to get through tough times. It really just gives you energy for life. And so obviously you found your definite purpose. Was it hard for you to discover exactly what your definite purpose is, and do you have tips for people on finding what is that thing that they're created for?
And the answers are yes and yes. The first answer is, it wasn't really hard for me to find it. It was hard for me to accept it. I've known since I was a little kid that I was supposed. I always had dreams of seeing myself speaking to people, and I would run into it and run away from it. I'd run, kind of like if you watch the movie The Matrix. Neo is running around the subway because he won't accept who he is. So he keeps running around. He can't get out of the subway until he accepts who he is. And once he accepts really who he is, that's how he steps into his oneness. See, that's all of our journey is returning to one with God. That's the only purpose of life here, is to return, in my opinion, is to return to oneness with God. That's why they kept telling Neo he's the one, because Zion is a metaphorical representation of all the stuff that's going on in his head. So once I finally stepped into the purpose, I'm going to share an exercise with you that I share with my students. It's not really hard to find your purpose. Number one, we were born with it already implanted in us. What happened is along the way, we start buying into other people's ideas of what we should be instead of what our spirit person was telling us we should be. So we stop trusting ourselves and start trusting in someone else. For example, our parents kept telling us, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that. So then we got shy about fully expressing ourselves because we didn't want our parents to tell us, no, that's not right. When we're in school, the teachers tell us what to do and what not to do. So we don't trust ourselves. We have to go ask the teacher what's right or wrong before we'll make the decision ourselves. So we lose power over who we really are. Now, I don't mean, you know, we should all go out and take control of everybody else, but there is a certain amount of power that God gives self for self-actualization. You know, talking about the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the only way you get to the very top is trust and believing and knowing in self. Here's the thing. I always ask people, think about to an event in your life to where you totally lost track of time and what you were doing.
Mm.
So I tell them, don't have any limits. I don't care if you were at an amusement park. Think of a time, it's happened to everybody. Think of a time in your life when you absolutely lost track of time. In that moment, your purpose was present, and this is how I know. You see, the spirit world knows nothing about time. The spirit world, God did not create time. Man created time. So since time is a man-made thing, when I lose track of time, I'm in another world. I'm what's called in spirit. Like, inspire means in spirit. I'm so inspired in that moment, I don't pay attention to time because in that moment, I'm not of this world. I'm in this world, but I'm not of this world. So when you go back to that point to where you lost track of time, that's when you're at one with God. Go back to whenever that event was and live in that moment. Whatever you were doing in that moment, that defines your purpose.
I like that. I like that. And everybody, as you said, has a time like that in their life.
And because that's when you totally lose track of time. Time doesn't matter because you're so inspired. And there's never been a time where anybody was inspired and depressed at the same time. There's never been a time when somebody was inspired and tired at the same time. There's never been a time when you're inspired that you're afraid of anything. When you're inspired, fear is not present. Fear can't live in a spirit of inspiration because it's not of God. God says fear not 366 times in the Bible. That means you have one for every day of the year and one for leap year.
Yes, exactly. And yet that is probably the biggest obstacle to people achieving their purpose, their legacy, their goals, their destiny is fear. And so many times it's just totally unrealistic fear. And it's sad. And so, you know, once people can get over that and open their eyes and open their beliefs to what's possible, boy, anything's possible. But as you said, people get beaten down by, okay, you know, here's your parents' plan for you. Go to university, get a job, work forever at that company. And so, you know, you have to really kind of step out from what people are telling you might be your destiny, your purpose, and find your own true purpose, not the one your parents have for you, not the one your friends have for you, but your own true purpose.
Absolutely. And speaking of that, because for all the listening audience, we're not knocking people with jobs. Jobs are great. You know, if a job is your purpose, because I know people who have jobs and their purpose is their job. But in my opinion, for the most part, I know about 3% of people that are really just on fire for their job. So for those people who are not just totally inspired by your job, that's not where you're supposed to be. I will go on record saying that. That is not where you're supposed to be. So you get into this thing where, Norris, I need some security. Well, Norris, I need to have that paycheck. Okay. But you go to church every Sunday, and God says he'll provide you with everything. So you're trying to tell me that if you do what God told you to do, that he won't provide for you? Because if that's what you believe, you're totally contradicting the same reason you go to church. If you really believe God will provide for you, find that thing that he said you're to do here because he said, I will provide everything for you, period. So now I'm going to test your mettle here. For those people who are on a job and are just on a job for a paycheck, what you're doing is you're making that paycheck more valuable than you as a spirit being, period. You're making that quote-unquote security, that's nothing but hidden fear. You're afraid to go out and do what it really takes to be the man or woman God wants you to be. So I will submit, because I'm in your face like that, I will submit that if you're not where you want to be right now, you're allowing a piece of paper. Money is nothing but a piece of paper. Money only has the value you give to it. So how can a piece of paper be more powerful or be more significant than an infinite being. It doesn't happen. That's an incongruent equation. But you're letting a piece of paper have domain over you, have dominion over you. See, here's what happens. Money knows its purpose for being here. Money as an entity knows why it's here in this planet, and it's to provide for the needs of those who know how to master it. Here's, I'll tell you how I know what I'm talking about. For those people who don't know how to master money, money leaves them and finds someone who does know how to master them. Money knows it's not a master. So it goes to the people that know how to master it. It knows its role. So let money play its role.
I love it. I love it. And yet at the same time, Norris, and it kind of is frustrating after you realize it, people like you and I who are working with people, there's a small percentage of people who really want to do more, to achieve the maximum they possibly can with the skills, talents, and abilities that they've received from God. It's been frustrating when you try to work with someone or you want to help someone who could really use a positive attitude and belief and purpose, but so many people are content watching TV after work. That's what they talk about during work, that they're going to go home and catch up on this show or that show. Part of life, and even when you work with someone and you motivate them that they, yeah, I want to be in this personal development thing, now they're going to go out and talk to their family and friends, and these are the ones who are the TV watchers, the couch sitters. And so it's tough in life for us who are in this business to realize that, okay, I'd like to work with this person, but timing, or right now, it'd be ineffective use of my time and energy. And same with people that you speak with in a group or you coach. They might get on the same program you're on, but they have to somehow shield themselves because they're going to go back to the same people that are in their lives who are content with doing what they're doing, and they're going to be like, what are you thinking? You can't do that. Sit down here and watch this show with me. And so that's a tough thing in life as well for us and for anybody that we work with that's like, yeah, I want to get on this program. But
right.
Now they go back into life and they're surrounded by the people who aren't on this program.
Right. Here's what happens in that whole dilemma. See, here's the dilemma. There are two different sets of people. There are people who are doing what they want to do, and then there are people who are doing what they think they should be doing.
Mm.
There's a big difference. Now, those people who do what they want to do, that's exactly what they do. They do what they want to do. Those people who do what they think they should be doing have dreams of doing what they want to do, but settle for doing what they think they should be doing. So the left-hand side are about 3% of people who actually do what they want to do. You and I do what we want to do. We love what we're doing. We've devoted our entire lives to doing what we want to do. That doesn't mean we're any better, any worse than anybody else. We just made a decision, which decision means to cut yourself off from. We cut ourselves off from living an average life, a meager life. We want to be on fire every day. Now, the other 97% of people decided, well, I think I should be on this job because I'm the provider and I need to provide for my kids. So this is what I think I should be doing. But at your job, you're daydreaming all day long about what you want to be doing.
Mm.
So you stifle any type of talent you have. You stifle any type of skills that God has given you, and you sacrifice it for that. So, you know, what happens
is
those
people,
you know, what's that?
I love this distinction, what you want to do and what you think you should do.
Yeah, there are people that do what they want, period. When you make a decision that you do what you want, you align yourself with God because God says, I'm your shepherd, you shall not want. So in that point, you're in spirit. Those other people are doing what they think they should be doing. And see, a lot of people don't understand that, you know, when I was studying Napoleon Hill, see, a lot of people get stuck in thinking. So there are different levels of thinking. Napoleon Hill was simply dedicating himself to say, here are the options. Pick the right option. Go with this option, period. And a lot of stuff I like about Think and Grow Rich, a lot of it has to do with faith. So
Amen.
What happens a lot of times with thoughts is, see, people have random thoughts. So what happens is thoughts beget other thoughts, and they cause you to do nothing. But once you narrow it down to that thing that your soul and your spirit are thinking, that's different. than what everybody else is thinking, because most of our thoughts are a collection of other people's thoughts that they've given us. It's not what we really think we really want to do. There are so many people that really want to go out there and get it, but they're afraid of what people might say or what people might think, or they're afraid of rejection. They're afraid of all that stuff. And to a point, that's okay, because it's somewhat of a defensive mechanism, but they're so afraid of that rejection that that rejection hurts more. And see, here's what happens. Any type of metamorphosis or change causes a little bit of discomfort. Think about when the caterpillar turns into the butterfly. He goes from this entity, goes into a cocoon, totally transforms who he or she or it is to become something beautiful. But it has to stay in the cocoon for a set amount of time. That's the only way it can happen. It can't become beautiful without going through that process. A lot of people are content in their circle, and they know that if they step outside of that circle, there's going to be some discomfort. The discomfort comes in the form of, what are they going to say? What are they going to think? What is my wife going to think? They're going to think I'm crazy. I've worked all these years to be an engineer. Why would I be anything other than an engineer? So they don't want to face that discomfort, so they stay the same. Imagine if the caterpillar went in the cocoon and never came out. Imagine the seed that's never planted but sits on a shelf in a jar. It never flourishes.
I
like the analogy of the seed. Here's a seed. Here's what a seed does. You can take any seed from any plant anywhere and sit it on a shelf, and it preserves itself. But that's all it is. It's a seed. A seed doesn't beget anything unless it's planted. I have an analogy that when you go to bury something and when you go to plant something, the action is the same. The only difference is the intention and the expectation of the seed. When I bury something, my intention is for it to stay under the ground and never produce anything. And my expectation is there's never anything that will come up here. When I plant a seed, I go with the intention that it's going to make something beautiful and be fruitful and multiply. My expectation is, as long as I nourish it and water it and put it in fertile soil, it will grow up and produce more seeds. So a lot of us are burying a lot of things in our lives instead of planting things in our life.
Wow, that's an interesting distinction. I love it. Norris, we just have a few minutes left. Tell our listeners your website address, your phone number, and maybe where they can get the book as well.
Okay, the book is still in pre-launch right now, so we haven't released it to the public yet. We're looking at a tentative date of January 29th. We're still working on that. Still working out some kinks with Amazon and all those guys, because our goal is to make it a bestseller out of the gate. We're going to be Amazon number one, so we've got to make sure all hands are on deck. Everything's going fine.
Nice.
My website is workwithnorris.com. You can go there. And actually, the way I wanted to extend a bonus to the people that listen in the audience right now, whether today or they listen to the recording, I have what's called a 29-minute empire building session, where we really go in and find out what's stopping you from building the empire that you want. Now, remember, empire has nothing to do with money. All it has to do with is, let's figure out why your business is not giving you everything you want in terms of time, energy, effort, money, and purpose. That's why you need to have a business. That's how you turn your business into an empire. And you can actually call me directly, and I'll give you my international number. It's 832-303-2745, and I do answer my phone. 832-303-2745, and I look forward to and make sure you say you heard me on the show with Tom Too Tall, and we'll make sure to get you taken care of. And it's been an absolute pleasure being here, for sure.
Oh, wow, and I look forward to the publication of your book. That will be very exciting, and so we'll keep looking for that towards the end of the month. And thank you so much for your time today, Norris. Have yourself an amazing day.
You do the same thing. Thanks so much, Tom. And everybody, go out there and get what you want.
Amen.